And what we are learning is quite impressive, but also quite regretful. There seems to be a lot of consensus on many things, but somehow we can't seem to get the message out. Somehow our leaders, whoever they may be, whether it's Musharraf, whether it's Imran, whether it's whoever, Nawaz Sharif, they sit in distant lands. They are probably somewhere on Mars or something. We can't get a word out to them. There are too many intermediaries in between. For example, we did a seminar on the financial markets and we learned what a mess it is. We did a seminar yesterday on the civil service reform and we learned that civil service is so fragmented and so incapable of doing anything. We learned the three seminars on resource management and found with both the private sector and the public sector are totally lacking in human resource management. They have no idea as to what human resource management means. We did a seminar on tax reform and we found out that tax policy and documentation policy is so antiquated. It's probably somewhere in the King Arthur era. And we did a seminar on the public sector development program and we found out that public sector development program is still sitting in the Harvard Advisory Group era. So we got all these things. So today we're going to turn to investment GDP, in particular, why companies don't grow. That's the problem that we have. I deliberately placed this chart in front of you. Pakistan is the lowest investor in the world. Now that says speaks volumes, but we're going to do an investment seminar on Tuesday. So I'm not going to do investment today, but I think we're going to ask the more important question. I find that our businesses remain very small. For example, Engro is only about $1.5 billion, which is... PSO is like, I think $3 billion or something, you know, that is, again, peanuts. So anyway, I thought today we'll do something different. To set up the seminar, I want to first get a young researcher, reporter, to give us a 2-minute presentation on what he thinks. Do our companies grow or not? Ali Khizr, are you there? Ali Khizr? Are you there? Ali Khizr? Ali is not here. Okay. If Ali is not here.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Yes.
To explain to us, answer my question. Do Pakistani businesses grow or not? Then our panel can adjust it, can address the question. Do you agree Pakistani businesses don't grow or do you think they grow? Go ahead.
Well, the data suggests that the Pakistani businesses do not grow when we see it compared to the rest of the world. So mm-hmm. let me put some numbers for you. Mm-hmm. Let me share this. Can you see this slide?
Go ahead, we can.
Yes. So if you see the first thing, the private credit to GDP in Pakistan, that's about 1/3, even less than 1/3 of Bangladesh and India. And I'm not comparing to some utopian economies or some developed economies. We are comparing to economies where we were better than those in past 30 years. So Pakistan credit to GDP is 18%, Bangladesh is 47%, India is 50%. And since we have a esteemed banker on the panel, so I like to put some context for him is this, that banks don't lend because the collateral is missing. The Pakistan land is about, say, 10 to 20% of the land that can be collateralable also. Then there's no bankruptcy laws. In 2008, when the credit to GDP went up, it came back down because it from 27% to, you know, this 15-17% because there were no bankruptcies and law, and there was no discourse of recovering. Then we all know that higher credit demand from the government and low investment to GDP ratio, what you mentioned. The other thing which you'd like to see is about from exports. In 1986, Pakistan exports of goods were $3.8 billion. And Vietnam was $0.8 billion. Today, Vietnam exports is about $264 billion, or it's growing. And Pakistan is about 24. So we have grown in the past, God knows, like 4 years or something. That's pretty much like 70% of my life or 80% of my life is about, we've grown by 6 times and Vietnam has grown by 330 times. So that's one area we need to talk about. Then you talked about some of the companies. So if we take the Pakistan top companies from various sectors, like OGCDC is the biggest company in Pakistan, and its market cap in 2010 versus its market cap in 2020, there's a decline of market cap in 40% in PKR and 70%, 68% in USD. So OGDC, what its value was, it's about one third of the value today. MCB, the biggest bank in terms of the market cap, in USD, its value is down by 43%. Interestingly, companies like Nestle, they're up by 23%. Pakistan Tobacco is by 147%, Engro by 48%. So we like to drink milk, we like to smoke cigarettes, and we like to consume. But in banks, in the oil and gas business, and you talked about the PSO, we don't. And if we see this market capitalization of Pakistan numbers within India, the biggest company in Pakistan has a market cap about 2.8 billion dollars. In India, it's 113 billion dollars. So you do the math. It's more than 50 times. And you see the rest of the numbers. So India have two companies over 100 billion, and we have no company of even 5 billion. So these are the things which we need to set on, that why it's not growing and what are the problems, where is the inconsistency of the policies, where the private credit is missing, and do we have a problem for electricity in the past, do we have a problem of terrorism, do we have a problem of productivity, and so forth. So we'll set the tone on this and pick up the threads later on. Thank you, Nadeem.
Okay, folks, there you see, we have piddling little companies. We have companies that are like, small and medium industries in the world. $3.8 billion is like peanuts in the rest of the world. So, Waleed, how do you mashallah, come from Waleed Sehgal is the CEO of Kohinoor Group of Companies. He comes from the famous Sehgal family. His grandfather, Saeed Sehgal, probably set up the Pakistani industry. Very famous family, and they've done a lot in this country. But Waleed, I'm sorry to say, despite so many achievements of your family, your companies still don't compete in the world. So what is the problem? Can you please tell us? I mean, and Ali, I don't buy Ali's problem, thing about credit. Google, Apple,
I don't either, but let's go. Thank you, Dr. Saab, for having me on this panel. I think the data is slightly misleading. So I think that Pakistani companies, they do grow, they just don't grow fast enough. So if you look at, I looked at some sort of superficial numbers over a 10-year period. I saw sort of large conglomerates in Pakistan. I saw Nishat has grown its consolidated sales 3 times, Engro 3 times. I looked at our own company, it's about 2 times, and that's not fast enough. It's growing, but it's not fast enough. In the same period, Pakistan's GDP has gone from $177 billion to $281 billion, right? So, the thing is, the issue to address is that we are growing, but we're not growing fast enough. And that's the essential problem, right? So if you look at it and you look at the traditional response, you get the kind of responses that Ali has mentioned, right? There's not enough credit. There are no bankruptcy laws. Nationalization put us back maybe 50 years. Access to credit is a problem. There are no people. You've talked about it. HR issues. There's brain drain. There's rent seeking by the business sector. There's a kleptocracy, and all of these arguments have merit, right? But I think that there's an overarching problem, and I think when one needs to look at that when you're addressing this issue, and that is, that is growth a core value for the Pakistani state? And that's something that needs to be addressed, right? And I'm just going to come back to this in a second. I just want to address before this, Nadeem Saab, you have mentioned this, and Ali has also mentioned this. I think that looking at market capitalization of companies is very misleading. It's a very misleading number, right? Because all Pakistani companies suffer from a Pakistan valuation discount. They all suffer from it. And that valuation discount has gone up in the last 10 years. It hasn't come down. So if you look at frontier and emerging market indexes, the lowest multiples are Pakistani businesses. That doesn't mean that because their market capitalization is small, that on a cash flow basis, that they are very small companies. So I did an exercise about 4 years ago, and we looked at the top 20 Pakistani-owned, Pakistani-managed business groups that were listed companies. And the 20th company had a cash flow of $75 million a year. And the top two were making $500 million a year in cash flow. That was the Nishad Group and Engro. That's serious. Those are serious numbers, like 500. And we had about 10 to 15 companies that were making about $100 million a year. That for industrial companies is pretty decent cash flow. And if you picked up these countries and you took them...
I hate to interrupt, but international... Yeah. On Wall Street, there are people sitting with bonuses of $100 million. So please don't tell me these are serious.
If you take a conglomerate like Engro or MCB, Nishad Group, and you take it across the border or into the Far East, the market capitalization will be 2 to 3 times what it is in Pakistan, right? And that will give them access. And then, you know, their access to credit, to international credit, and all of these things are much easier in economies that are more in tune with the global economic system. So I think that I don't think taking market capitalization is a fair analysis, but I mean, that's open to interpretation, right? So I think
Waleed, how about taking exports?
Sorry. I made a mistake. Let's not make it that. Let's let him finish, then we'll talk later. Okay. Go ahead.
So I think the overarching issue is that is growth a core value for the Pakistani state? And the answer to that is unequivocally no, it's not. Right? We don't. If you look at you've done a lot of work on growth, and aapne bahut kaam kiya in that growth framework you published. If I look at the top anchors of Pakistan, I don't think even a single person has done a program on that. If you look at the sugar sector report, every household has talked about it, every WhatsApp group has talked about it, every anchor has talked about it. It's discussed 24/7 in Pakistan. So controversies are discussed all the time. Growth and how we're going to move forward as an economy, these are issues that are just not interesting for me. You know, these WhatsApp groups are very popular in Pakistan. And I think they're a microcosm of Pakistani society. The minute I start talking about the economy on these groups, everybody keeps quiet. Nobody's interested. They start private messaging me and telling me, "Yaar, ye kya aap economy ki baatein karte hain? Kisi ko samajh aati nahi hai. Isko chhodne pade." The lowest rated shows in Pakistan are shows on the economy. Now, the function, as long as growth as a concept is not a core value for the Pakistani state, this we cannot compete. All of this is a direction that the state has to set, and everything and all these other issues that we talk about bankruptcy laws, about investment, about exports, are a subset of a fundamental value that the Pakistani state has to set. And look, the effectiveness of the Pakistani state in achieving things is very potent, because we decided as a state that we wanted to build nuclear bombs, and against all odds, against all sanctions, against great financial difficulty, we managed to do that. And we've had three eras in which we've seen that growth is a fundamental value in those three eras. We saw it in Ayub Khan's time, we saw it in the first Nawaz Sharif government, and we saw it for a great part of Musharraf's government. And we were competing in terms of GDP growth internationally. We were amongst the fastest growing economies in the world. We had a lot of reform. Aur us waqt koi ye babu culture, ye sari jo hum baatein karte hain, sab khatam ho gaya. We had serious growth in the economy in those times. You know, there's an interesting anecdote that my father told me when we bought Maple Leaf Cement from the government. So he bought the company and we had paid for it, but we hadn't got possession. And he went to see the Prime Minister and said, "Ki ji, maine paise de diye, but mujhe possession nahi deti aapki bureaucracy." And it was one phone call from the Prime Minister to the Chief Secretary Punjab, and he was told, "Ki aap possession de inko, what's the issue?" So ye sari jo direction, and we got possession of the factory subsequently, right? So this direction comes from the top. Now we're currently operating in an environment where we are discussing $200 billion in Switzerland, we're discussing every day. There's a discussion of cartels, the profit kar liya hai, chori ho gayi hai, ye ho gaya, wo ho gaya. Lekin, if you think profit is bad, and if you think private sector profit is bad, we're never going to grow. We have seen that business sentiment is at its lowest ebb, because this is all we're discussing. We love to discuss controversies. We love to talk about what's wrong and but we're not talking about the elephant in the room, and that is growth. Aptima is lambasted all the time. All trade bodies are lambasted all the time. So I think that unless this becomes a core value of the Pakistani state, top to bottom, we can't grow.
Let me get Alman Aslam in now. Alman Aslam has been the Citibank. He's been advising businesses in Pakistan for 20 years now. He's an advisor to many companies. Alman, you have seen the Pakistani landscape like me for a long time. And I think you also wonder why these businesses don't grow. Or if they do, please advise me. Now, Waleed has made very valid points. It's in our culture. But are there any other things, or is it just the fact that we don't want to grow?
Thank you, Nadeem. I think the question that you've asked is a very fundamental question. And probably the PIDE should spend a lot of time and research on dealing with this. When you posed me the question, I also thought about the way Waleed is describing things. But what we are looking at is the manifestation of the symptoms. What we need to talk about is what is the cause of all these systems. And I think Waleed is addressing that. Hamara fundamental masla ye hai ke we have an environment.
Salman, stay in English. I think there's some people here who want English.
Okay. We have an environment in which we create an environment for the business community in which they are being asked to do things which have got nothing to do with growth, but are essential for their survival. Now, we're not going to talk about Waleed's father and Mancha and so on and so forth. But let's talk about the people below that who don't have the kind of access that these people have. And the problem there is that they have to deal with government. And this government, I'm not talking about the PTI government, I'm talking about governments over the last 50 years. Their fundamental perspective is okay, all the business people are thieves. And that they are people that one has to be, you know, they have to be suppressed or whatever it is. Let's look at the state institutions which the businessman has to deal with every day. He has to deal with, and no order of importance, but that's the first one that comes to mind, is FBR. FBR is the most venal and corrupt organization we have in the country. And the problem there is that if that is the organization that they have to deal with, they know that they have to constantly spend time, money, and effort to go and deal with the FBR. I was, and since it's this is the time of Corona and I sit at home a lot, I was reading a book on the fall of the Mughal Empire, and I read a page which I thought somebody was describing the FBR. And that was when the Marathas took over power from the Mughals, they had a tax collection system which was so bad because they were so venal and corrupt that they were bothering the people who were paying taxes and they were not paying enough taxes to the rulers. In the same region, there was a French general who also had an area. He had the right kind of tax collection people and there it worked quite well. So we have FBR, which is a problem. Our legal system doesn't work at all. The piece of paper that is written, agreements are written, you take it to court, you'll spend the next 20 years trying to solve it. That's why the Pakistani banks don't lend to the private sector, because they have no recourse. When they do have recourse, then they don't lend. So if you have, they make car loans because they know they can go and seize the car, but they're not going to make loans otherwise other than thorough investigation. Because they have no recourse to their assets. There's a lawyer whom all of us, I think we know in Lahore, and all the people who have bad loans go to him. And he says, don't worry, I will string you along for 20 years, it's not a problem. The legal system, and he does it. He has a track record to prove it. Finance, somebody put up a slide right now that the credit is only 18%. Well, obviously it is. If I have the government of Pakistan borrowing from me at 14 or 15%, why should I even bother about doing anything else in life? I'm just going to lend to the government of Pakistan. 50 to 60% of the balance sheet of banks are PIBs. Why am I going to put in effort? Why am I going to train my people? Why am I going to do all these things when I've got my money coming in for free? We have the government involved in all sectors of the economy. Let's talk about the building sector or the house development sector. You have a regulator, LDA, who's also a developer. You have DHA, which is the government entity, is also a developer. How do you get a regulator and a developer in the industry to do perform the same? What do you think is going to happen to those people who are not government developers? How are you going to compete with LDA and DHA? So you create this environment. Let's talk a bit. And then what we do is we create this environment and we have these dysfunctional state institutions which force people to not grow, to do all sorts of things under which then they are dunned, that look, you are behaving unethically, you are behaving incorrectly. And then, of course, they create a reputation is created that these people are growing, but they're all thieves. I would like to take the example, because this is right now very topical, of the sugar industry. So right now we are saying that the sugar industry, the people there are corrupt and so on and so forth. Let's take a look at what's happening in the sugar industry. The government of Pakistan, because it wants to give the sugar grower a good return, insists that they be paid 180 rupees per mound of sugar. On the other hand, they say, we will not allow you to increase the sugar price because that is, you're fleecing the public. Actually, you're not fleecing the public because the majority of the sugar is consumed by soft drink manufacturers and mithai walas and people who make candies. So the consumption by the household is a very small proportion of the total sugar consumed. So what do we do now? On one hand, we've got to take care of the farmer. On the other hand, we are trying to manipulate the price. The government doesn't want the price of sugar to go up. So what happens in the middle? The sugar industry has to somehow deal with these two squeezes at that end. And what do we have? We have on every kilo of sugar, I think we have 6 to 7 rupees of taxes. Now, the easiest thing for a sugar mill owner then is going to be, look, I can't make money because on one hand, my input price is controlled by the government. My output is politically suppressed. So what am I going to do? I'm going to do business out of books so that I don't have to pay the 6 or 8 rupees of kilos for tax on sugar. So, you create an environment in which you force people to do things which are unethical and wrong. And then when they do that, that you turn around and say, these people are all thieves, okay, and we should not be supporting.
Let me so, stop you. Then we'll come back.
I just want to say one more thing before you stop me.
Go ahead.
We talk, there is nothing wrong in the Pakistani businessmen. There's nothing stop them from growing. This is the same environment, which I just want to take an example of the institution that I used to work for, Citibank. Today, even today, all the major emerging market geographies of Citibank are run by Pakistanis.
Yeah.
Most of them have graduated from Karachi IBA or LUMS or Lahore Business School. It is the same people who have grown in these organizations. Pakistan, because they were given an environment which was not, didn't have all these problems. Pakistani businessmen have to deal with day in and day out all these issues of government in which they come and interfere and suppress their ability to increase. And that is why I think they are not growing. And if you let them go, they will grow. So that is the end of my, whatever I had. Thank you.
As you say, it is the government stupid. I mean, it's always the government. Unfortunately, as a Chicago guy, I believe that firmly. But let's leave that alone for a minute. What you said in the end was absolutely correct. As I said, we held 3 seminars on human resource management, and all of them came to the conclusion that Pakistan is talent repellent. We throw out our talent to Citibank, to Wall Street, to Intel, to wherever. So we now got a gentleman from Intel, Mohsin Iqbal Saab, who has worked in Intel, who has returned to Pakistan and worked here for a while. Mohsin Saab, can you please tell me, I've heard that we don't want growth. I agree with that too. Yes, the government interferes. I agree with that too. But there's a third element which also we want to talk about, which is that the businesses here don't want to professionalize. There are hardly any businesses that are professionalized except for the multinationals. Neither the government nor the private sector is professionalized. And Mohsin Saab, you can also talk about the new fad that somehow IT will save us. Mohsin Saab, what do you think? Why do businesses not grow?
Yes, thank you. I first of all, I'd like to say that, you know, when we are talking about it, we are talking about organizations that are domestic bound and international bound. So they have grown and they have attained their status doing business domestically, or some of them have done it through internationally. What I find that, you know, we often, this is a standard thing that I've seen while working in Pakistan, that we often blame government or the macro environment for lots of the problems that plagues our company. But I think the problem is also inside. Very few of the companies, I feel, that have that mindset that they want to grow. And if they want to grow, they think of growth, yes, I want to have some international customers. I want to have some products which are adapted for international markets, or I want to start opening up offices outside of Pakistan. But that's a very confined thinking. I think one of the things that is that we are encountering is we don't have companies in Pakistan currently who think on a global first basis. Because if you think big and you think global, then you're going to set your organization that could deal with all of these, would deal with some of these problems. We don't have thinkers. We don't have thinkers who are on a global first basis. If I look at my own work experience, the companies I work with, they are all global operators. So they think globally. Even the example that was just given of Pakistanis flourishing in an environment like Citibank, why? I think that's the question to ask: why Citibank and why not the same? Why not the same in Pakistani banks? I think one of the problems that we have is a mindset. We do not have that mindset, which is required for us to grow in that level. And I think that comes from the fact that the mindset is not there either at the at any level of the hierarchy. And now I think another big factor that plays into all this is the organization culture. And I think that's where I'm going to say that organization culture, which talks about meritocracy, and organization culture, which talks about customer orientation or values such as risk taking, these are not existent in quite a lot of our companies. Although we would go around claiming that, yes, we have all of these things. But if I compare that with the global companies, I see that we are lacking. Unless and until we have this change, we have this organizational cultural change, we are still going to be grappling with these numbers, which if you would be comparing at an international or a global level, we won't be coming anywhere near to a satisfactory number. If I look at my own information technology industry, we have businesses who are doing international business. But in any of the domains or any of the subdomains, we don't have a global brand. We don't have a global operator in any of them. Even if we take examples of NetSol Technologies or any other businesses, they are doing business. They are doing business from international markets, but they are not global brands. Say NetSol is not a global brand in the SI subdomain, like in the system integrator subdomain. There we have the likes of Samsung SDS, Avanade. They are not in that league. Why? Because I would say that they are lacking the organizational culture that is required, that is prerequisite for the growth to of the level that you are seeking, so that they are shown in the in the indicators that you are right now looking at, referring to. So I think we should not just only blame the government, the policymakers, the regulators, but we also should look within. Even a lot of the hiring, my take on this is that a lot of hiring is not based on merit. It's a lot of times it is hiring based on yes men, or that's the kind of hiring, professional hiring that takes place. I think an organizational cultural change right now is a critical requirement for the growth if you want to go become a global player. That's what this is the reason why you would go and prosper in an Intel or a Citibank or a JP Morgan, but when you come back, you are running 100 million or 150 million or any of those companies that you are alluding to. And we fall in this trap of hiding behind the government or the policy issues or the regulatory issues or the mafia issues. Trust me, in every country you have these issues. Every country, every emerging market has these issues. China is no different. Korea is no different. Taiwan is no different. I used to hear these stories from every market, yet they would post much higher numbers.
Thank you. Thank you, Mohsin Sahab. I think I really enjoyed that. That's very nice. So you've got three hypotheses here. I mean, all of them are correct. I'm not going to say they're competing, but there's three theses. One is that, yes, we as a people don't value growth. We are suspicious. We lack social culture, etc. Government is also very suspicious. At the same time, the government is inept. The government is overbearing. The government actually overregulates. The third is that that the organization itself, that the state culture prevails, the organization culture and the mindset prevails. Now, Atif Bajwa couldn't join us today, so I'm going to ask Naseem Beg to help us think this through. Naseem Saab, what do you think about these three hypotheses?
Sorry, I wasn't quite prepared for this one.
No problem.
Let me put it this way. I feel that we are more sort of dominated by an elitist control of our economy. And it's essentially that, and that has led to a lot of rent seeking. And while we are seeking rents, where, like Alman said, if the banks can earn nice money on PIBs, if other businesses can form cartels, dominate the marketplace, it's easy money flowing your way. There are obviously, and each business has a legal justification, whether it's the current issue on IPPs or earlier on the fertilizer policy. Whichever way you look at it, there are preferential treatments locked into the legal system through a policy framework. Nothing illegal when a businessman goes and benefits from that and exploits that. I think that is really the issue. So while all the issues brought out are right and fair to an extent, but I think really the key issue is where we as the elitist control all the regulatory capture, you name it. And then there is obviously this feeling in Islamabad as well as in Rawalpindi that businessmen are thieves, daulagari, et cetera, et cetera. So Islamabad looks at business people with a great deal of suspicion, rightfully so. Mm. And the businessmen have a right to crib because the smaller guys are treated with the same brush and then treated very badly. FBR, the issue that was brought up, terrible. So we've got an entire structure which will not allow us to grow. At the other side, I'll say, there is the undocumented economy. It's growing. People manage. They get by. But as soon as you start growing big, you come into too many eyes. Most businesses will not want to register and become formal, come to the banking sector, because there'll be a good maybe 20 or more government agencies, and they're, I would not say agencies, people working for them. So it's an overall environment of lawlessness. Yes, the courts don't work, nothing works. So and whoever can get away will get away. That's my summary of it.
Okay, thank you. Well, Waleed, then I'm come back to you. Look, As Naseem Saab just mentioned, this is a captured economy. The elite runs it. They get subsidies. They get privileges. But at the same time, the subsidy, privileges, rent-seeking environment, you guys are saying, hey, you don't want growth. And the government is saying, oh, well, we have to regulate you. So it's kind of a, to my mind, it's what we read in economics like a prisoner's dilemma type situation where we are not kind of dealing with this issue at all. All we are doing is fighting each other for rents, right? And as Lee Kuan Yew said, Pakistan is a democracy where non-existent resources are auctioned. So the question is, you guys, why can't you work for a business framework that works? And you, why don't you guys professionalize? Why don't you guys have a vision? I like what Mohsin Saab said. Why don't you guys have the vision of Steve Jobs, Bill Gates, and
let me jump in on this? Okay. So there's a, we are much lamented the states of Pakistan, right? But I'm going to address this question second. Let's address this IT question first. Let me please unequivocally tell you, there is going to be nothing that is going to happen on the IT scene in Pakistan at all. Mm. And I'm an investor in many IT companies, and I can tell you the biggest problem yet again is the government of Pakistan. And I'll tell you why. There are no intellectual property laws in Pakistan. So all startups have to register abroad because they cannot raise funding in Pakistan. Mm. So I'll give you an example. There's a very fast growing startup in Pakistan called Airlift Technologies. I'm one of the seed investors in this business. It's a bus hailing app, right? So we started, it was valued at $50 million 9 months after inception, right? I wanted to put more money in it. So I went to the State Bank of Pakistan and I said that I'd like to put money in this startup. It operates in Pakistan. The money is not leaving Pakistan, but it's a Singapore company. I'm going to pay the MCB bank branch in Lahore. The money will not leave Pakistan. My shares will be issued abroad. I will give you an undertaking. Whatever money I make, I'll bring the shares back. Nahi sir, ye nahi kar sakte. Ye nahi kar sakte. This is not allowed. So I said, why? The money is not leaving Pakistan. No. Ye toh aap ECC ka approval nahin. Aap idhar jayen, aap udhar jayen. We cannot think globally because we are not allowed to think globally. Lucky Cement took 2 years to send $50 million abroad to put up a plant in Africa. Indian individuals are not allowed to send money abroad. Pakistani individuals can send as much money as they want to London, Switzerland, Singapore, wherever they want to send money, they can send money. But Pakistani businesses are not allowed to do that. I think it's for $1 million, you need State Bank approval. And up to after $5 million, you need the ECC of the government of Pakistan, the cabinet sits and gives you approval for sending $5 million. So I spoke to many politicians about this issue. And I said that, you know, I want to invest $300,000 in a startup. So they tell me, ki sir, aap chori karna chahte hain? So I said, yeah, if I wanted to invest $300 million in a startup, you could say that I'm going to steal it. But honestly, I'm not going to steal $300,000. And at the end of the day, my investment company could not invest in this business, and I had to use my own private resources to invest in the business. Subsequently, there was a second round in the company and I couldn't participate because I didn't want to take that personal risk. I wanted to put it on my investment company that's structured to do this business, but I couldn't invest in it. So until and unless we sort out these sorts of issues and we get over this thing, ki ji yaar wo paise baar le jayenge, ye ho jayega, wo ho jayega. Lekin no one is going to jeopardize 90% of their assets in Pakistan for a couple of $1 million abroad. Nobody's going to do it. It doesn't make economic sense for people to do this. Mm-hmm. Now comes the issue of the states and all of this state culture and all that stuff. Look, I run a company that is completely professional. Mm-hmm. I ran a textile business that was completely professional. I run an investment company that's completely professional. I think that we have made that transition as a family to becoming quite professional in maybe 70% of our business, right? Mm-hmm. But I think that, you know, you can't say we have two examples in Pakistan, right? We have Engro and we have Nishad. So Engro is like a professional company. Everybody wants to work there. Everybody loves Engro. And it's like the choice employer that everybody wants to go to. And then there's Nishad, which is the complete opposite, which is a state dominated, state run organization. Both companies have merit. You look at the Nishad group and you look at the assets and the businesses that they've built up. You can't lament Mr. Mansha for being a state. He's done remarkably well in his businesses. And it is probably the premier business group in the country. You have the lucky cement, cement group, Muhammad Ali Taba's group, SAIT organization as well. It's semi-SAIT. It's got some businesses that are professional, some businesses that are SAIT run. But the flagship of the group is run by a SAIT. So we love to lament the fact that they are all these SAITs that are running businesses. Now, you know, at the end of the day, look at Engro's growth throughout its history and look at it when Hussain Daud took it over. So you can't, this is not a question of culture. And I don't think that SAITs lack the vision. I don't think they lack the culture. I think one thing happened that once nationalization happened, I think SAITs became very inward looking and started, you know, wanted to have a very tight control on their businesses. And it became as groups became smaller, it became an employment opportunity, right? So suddenly your group was 70% smaller than it was. You had 10 cousins, you had to give them a job. And that culture kind of evolved in this way that the family business became a employment opportunity for members of the family, no matter how smart or competent they were. So yes, that issue exists, but I don't think that you can lament them because these guys are SAITs, they don't know how to run businesses, because the best companies in Pakistan are run by SAITs and very successful SAITs. So that's one part. But as far as this IT thing is concerned, look, unless we sort out the regulation on the IT side, I can tell you, I'm one of the few sort of SAITs that invests in IT. We're going nowhere with this. And I heard Afeez Sheikh talking about it the other day on television that IT is going to save us and IT is not going to do anything. I'll just give you one small example and then I'll stop. Systems Limited, good company in the Pakistani context, earns about ₹1 billion a year, started in the 70s. It has a market cap of $50 million. Tata Consultancy started about 5 years before Systems. It has a market cap of $125 billion.
Yeah.
So we're nowhere on this.
Yep.
And we're going.
Okay. So that's very.
Point. Let me come to Alman. Alman, how would you react to this? Alman? Alman there?
I think he's on mute.
Alman, can you hear me? Alman Aslam. Alman Aslam?
Sir, unmute. Yeah.
I don't know, it went on mute for some reason. Okay.
Alman, yeah. I can hear you. Wait. How would you react to this business of, I think we've identified the problem. We are very clear. Yes, okay. Government is a huge mess. And yes, we should talk about it. I think we also agree that yes, we are a people who are basically satisfying. Once I get my Gymkhana membership, I play golf, I have my Mercedes. I really am not hungry like Steve Jobs. I really don't need to go far. And the third thing is we abhor professionalism in our political dialogue also. We don't like technocrats. We only like politicians who are part-time or whatever, right? So what is the problem? Is that the problem or do you see something else here?
Let me try to state your question the way I understand it.
Sure.
So you're saying, sorry, you'll have to state the question again. I lost your question. See, state that again.
I'm saying very simply what we've learned just now, which is correct, that the government is a problem. The government is a mess.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to reform government. We don't want to reform government. There is no demand for reform in the government. Right? We only want to go out and catch thieves because it looks very sexy. It's like Robin Hood going to kill the thieves.
Yeah.
At the same time, we also have a culture where we really don't want to grow. Even as a people, we don't want to grow. Even your friends, my friends. The moment we get our golf club membership and our Mercedes, we are happy. We don't want to go. We are not hungry like Steve Jobs. We don't want to go the extra mile.
Okay. I understand what you're saying.
And the third thing is we don't like professionals. We just don't like professionals, period.
Okay, look, I come back to the same issue. Let's talk about growth in terms of why don't we want to grow? Yes, there are the large groups that we've just been mentioning, the Nishat, the Engros, Waleed's father, and so on and so forth. They do grow. And I've heard just right now that they are the elite group, which is then to blame for all the problems. Well, they are the elite group because they've figured out that to grow in this country, they have to be, they have to have a relationship with government under which they can get things done. Because that is the way you're going to get there. I think the good, very crude example of this is when Malik Riaz came on TV and said to an anchor, look, the only way you can grow in Pakistan and get business done is by bribing. And if you think that you can get anything done in Pakistan without bribing, you have another thing coming. So that is the environment that we've created under which people grow. That's how they grow in Pakistan, by making sure that they have relationships with the various sectors or in the government which can help them grow. Now, what does that do? One of the things that does is, then when you have such an environment, you don't have foreigners coming in and investing in the country. Why? Because they find that the systems and the processes in the country are very opaque. And if you have something opaque, the only way they can get things done is by having a domestic partner, or they give up and they go. Now, what does that do? What that does is that creates a lack of competition for the domestic investor. He does not want, he doesn't have to professionalize. He doesn't have to grow to a larger level because he doesn't have any competition. Now, I'll give you an example right now. In the white goods industry, Koch, which is the Turkish company, has come into Pakistan by buying Dollons. I can tell you that the other white goods manufacturers are now concerned because they will compete and they will bring in professional manner. So the level of efficiency required will go up. But why didn't it happen in the other industries? Because they will not come into the other industries and they will not compete, which would be a goad for the other industries to grow. Now, I'll take banking as an example. All the innovations, and I might be overstating this because this is my original organization. All the innovations in Pakistan banking were brought in by Citibank. Credit cards, car loans, mortgage finance, project finance, M&A, everything was done by them. Now, when they do that, then the other banks have to react. They have to say, we have to grow by doing these things also. But we don't allow technology to come in because we stop it from coming in by making the system so opaque that in a sense it protects the domestic investor because then he doesn't have to do anything. And we're not allowing the other people in. Now, let me talk a little more about this. I was talking to a textile manufacturer who's a very smart guy. He's quite substantial in Pakistan. And he sat down with me and said, look, I actually think that if I started running my textile business out of the States, I would make more money. Yep, because electricity tariffs are lower and so on and so forth. So I said to him, well, why don't you do it? He said, you know, I have an environment in Pakistan, talking about the elite environment in the country, in which if there's anything that goes wrong, I know who to pick up the phone and get things done. Whether it is a thanedar, whether it is somebody in FBR, or whatever else it is. In the New York, I can't do that. So there is an environment created in the country in which the elite groups have know how to operate in that environment. And they obviously take advantage of that. Now, they won't get that anywhere else. When I used to work at Citibank, chairman of Citibank, John Reed, used to come to take the train to come to town. And then used to press a button and go up the elevator. You don't have to do that here. So why should you? Unless you change the environment in this country, these things will not happen.
Great. Thanks. Hassan Malik is with us. Hassan Malik, former Unilever guy, as well as very well-known guy, as well as now the chairman of Pakistan Business Council. Hassan, please tell us. You represent big businesses in Pakistan, which we think are small and medium industries in the world. Why don't they have the vision? Why don't they have the culture to grow, these little guys who are big guys in Pakistan?
Okay, so I think first of all, you need to differentiate. I mean, what are we talking about? Are we talking about business in Pakistan not growing or Pakistani businesses not growing? Yeah, because I think I see a confusion here. Business in Pakistan is definitely growing. I worked for one company for the last 24 years. In my last six or seven years there, we grew fourfold. That was top line growth, right? Bottom line growth was fivefold growth. Right? So businesses in Pakistan were growing, and I believe they still are growing. The same business continues to grow. And I think Unilever is not an exception by any means. There are lots of others out there. You could debate, this is a foreign company. Are we too liberal in allowing foreign direct investment to come here? Should we have limited this to to local companies and so on and so forth? That's a different discussion altogether. But to say that business is not growing in Pakistan, I think is wrong. I think the second point that I want to make is that definitely the environment in which business in general operates is not conducive for growth. I think the points have been made already. If you look at our taxation policies in particular, our import policies, which are also a subset of the taxation policies, they are pro-import bias, anti-manufacturing bias, anti-consolidation, and anti-accumulation bias. So for example, take what are the inducements or what are the encouragements that are given for companies to get together to form groups or to establish holding companies. A very good law had been brought about in 2010, which allowed the offset of losses in one part of the group with the profits in another part of the group, which, by the way, happens all over the world. There is hardly a country where it doesn't happen. Yep, that was all totally undone 6 or 7 years later, by which time the Engro group had been formed, a number of other holding companies had been formed. And then, our finance minister at that time came in and he said, all rubbish, go back to square one. What is a group? Yeah. Now, you know, and I know that in order to become competitive, to get a stronger basis for growth, a stronger foundation for growth, you need to consolidate. But if you have a fiscal policy that does not allow you to do that, then you're going to be anywhere. I think the key things that we try to deal with at Pakistan Business Council is very much trying to advocate policies based on very sound research, we hope, and global evidence that would encourage the growth environment. So encourage consolidation, encourage accumulation of capital, because obviously if you don't have capital, you're not going to grow. Yeah? So I think those two points really to say. So businesses in Pakistan are growing and the environment could be a lot better.
I think that raises the fundamental issue, a very good point. Businesses in Pakistan are growing and interesting enough, those businesses which are professionally run and multinational are growing and are local businesses. So we'll come back to Waleed on that. But let me ask, I think Ali Siddiqui wanted to raise a point, but he's gone, I presume. If he's around, Ali, can you make that point? If not, then Ajwad Saab, do you want to make a point?
Thank you. My name is My name is Ajwad Imran. I'm a financier by training, and I think we've done a pretty good job here today diagnosing what are the major problems with the Pakistani market. I sort of concur with Waleed that family culture isn't really the issue here. We just need to look a bit far towards Korea, where they retain the state culture, but they've still grown at an incredible pace. Samsung is a prime example. So coming back to what is the solution for this? What would we like to see from the government? Ehsan Malik just touched upon fiscal policy. Is there something to do with that? Or do we need to encourage more credit? I mean, there's a school of thought of economics, economists who are saying that as long as the GDP is growing faster than your interest rate, the debt levels taken on by a company matter less. So I'd like to have a bit more thoughts from the group members, panel members here on what would they exactly like to see be done in the first phase. The issues are many. Of course, we need to be prioritizing.
Fair point. Thank you. Imran Haq is here, I think. Imran, are you there or not? Okay, no. Anybody else who wants to say anything? Otherwise, I want to go back to Mohsin Saab, Mohsin Iqbal.
Dr. Nadeem.
Ji, boliye.
Main Muazzam Tour, CEO of Capital Engineering Corporation.
Boliye.
Many of the colleagues have mentioned very nicely about the sub-segments. The main things are just three or four. It is the consistent policy. The policies in Pakistan has never been consistent. Mm-hmm. As mentioned by many of the panel members, the same brain, the same guys when go to the United States, they become the best surgeons, they become the best planners, they perform in NASA. They give them an enabling environment, and I studied a couple of years back a report from United States where they made a study, research study, on comparison of performance of Pakistanis versus average Americans. And they made around 20 sub-segments. And in all of those 20 segments, Pakistanis outclassed the average Americans in every 20 fields. So some of the colleagues said that they have learned to live in Pakistan, the big conglomerates. So they said a little bit in the nice manners, but the fact is that based on this corrupt bureaucracy and corrupt government practices, they have become they have openly embraced the corruption. There is nothing less worse than this, because even on the public asset, in the public television statement, Riaz Mulk said, ke agar Pakistan mein paye nahi lagaoge to kaam nahi ho sakta. So on the one side, this is the most unethical thing which should have been condemned, because he was encouraging the common public to go for corruption. But on the other hand, he was the only businessman in Pakistan who was dareful enough to speak the truth what he has done, but other conglomerates were not doing. But apart from Mr. Ehsan's comment that yes, people and companies from outside Pakistan are doing well, but within Pakistan, if we come to the non-performance and non-professional attitude of Pakistani SMEs, is also because of our education system. You know, I'm providing 20 internship last 25 years. And every year, I am looking at the lower and lower and lower level of quality.
Okay, two sab bas ab aage chale.
People with master and MPhil degree are not able to write a simple one page.
Fair enough.
In a nice manner.
Good point. Mohsen Saab, can I bring you back in and ask you very quickly? Then I'll go to Noman Ahmed. Noman, just give me a minute. Mohsen Saab, can you please tell me why you said something, and which I share your vision and altogether, that when I read these books, like, you know, Peter Senge or Jim Collins or whatever, they say that business is a vision. Business is a network of people working together. Business is somebody trying to create innovation, etc. Do you see that in our businesses, or because you alluded that you don't? Why is it, and what can be done to make that happen?
Your voice was breaking up. Can you please repeat the last part again?
But let me just say that, look, when you read all the great business thinkers from Peter Drucker onwards, they're always talking of business being a vision, business being not just about profits. When you look at Steve Jobs or Bill Gates, they made more money than they need. They're giving it away. The question really is, are people, are businessmen, neither have the vision, they want to amass money, but they don't even know what to do with it. But they don't have the culture or that professionalism. What do you think? Why is that? Is that just a mindset problem? Is that just in us? Or is it the government that is making it happen?
I think we have plenty of things to say on the macro issue, and I think on the governmental and policy issues, and I think there are other people more competent than me to comment on that. I would say from an organizational point of view, I think the organizational culture in many of these companies is lacking to a significant extent, because we are successful. But I think many of these companies require to revisit their organizational culture. And some of these things require new values to be included in those cultures. For example, innovation, a key requirement of today, innovation in everything, not only just from a product point of view, a service point of view, but also innovation from service from a quality of management point of view. I feel that our at the end of the day, internally, we have challenges. We are growing, but organizational culture of ours is not such which will enable us to become in the rank and file of global 100 or global 1000. That requires a different kind of culture. And there are enough case studies available with which we can learn. As a matter of fact, Pakistani diaspora and current Pakistanis, a lot of them have worked for global companies. They need to be thinking about how come they were successful in those companies. And when they come they cannot repeat the same level of service. So I think the main thing for me, if I look at it from an internal company point of view, is the culture. Other aspects that I find missing is quality. Quality, not just from a quality of product or a quality of quality of service, but also a quality from a management point of view, from the HR's output. Some of the things that is being alluded to, education and all, so that really reflects on the output of the workforce. So again, this needs to be part and parcel of the culture. A new value system needs to be defined if we want to be in the rank and file of the global first. So for me, the main problem right now is in around
the organization culture. I'll bring Noman Ahmed here. Noman Ahmed, mashallah, is the CEO of Al Moist Sugar Mill, a young businessman coming from Stanford, etc. Noman, can I take you to Mohsin Saab's question? Asked you a very simple question. You can take on other things too. I want to write a book like Build to Last. You've seen that book, I presume? You have seen it?
Absolutely. One of my favorite books.
I want to write it for Pakistani firms. Can you give me 10 companies that I can write that book on? Noman?
Well, I hope you... Well, the Build to Last part is a little bit different because it's at the formation of a company. But if we look at the Good to Great part, I could probably give you 10 different companies that we could take from $100 million to $1 billion in Pakistan. And but I think behind all of that, there have been some excellent points that have been made. If there's one thing that I'd like to say, and I'm sorry, I'm going to digress a little bit from your question, but it's really nationally, we need to make sure that our narrative is right. Rules, policies around business, that all entrepreneurs can figure out. You set the rules, they might not be the best that we like, but we'll figure out how to work with them, how to, grow with them. We'll design our businesses differently. And of course, that has an impact. But I think on the whole, the malaise that we see in the Pakistani business space, and it's not like we don't have good people, is the narrative has to change. We have to make, if we really feel, and I'm not sure that as a nation we do, this forum might or might not, but that entrepreneurs are important, that businessmen are important, that sales are important, people who work as per the law and grow and make money are good people because they're providing a lot of jobs, then we have to, in fact, highlight their role. We have to make them the national heroes. The American dream was maybe developed over time, but the American dream is very carefully conveyed. I've lived some part of my life in Silicon Valley. They continue to talk about these people, to glorify the tech entrepreneur and motivate people to do this. In our world, just take an example, we were mentioning this one interview by a certain business person in Pakistan who's grown, and the fact that has actually defined our national psyche, that this confirmed Emerson has finally confirmed it. Why don't we talk about and bring forth the people who actually are doing good work, have built businesses by paying their taxes, and unless we do that, unfortunately, and change the narrative, because we all somehow believe that if you've made money, you've made it the wrong way. Steve Jobs has made it the right way, but if you've made it in Pakistan, then it must have been the wrong way. So I don't know if that doesn't change, then, I don't know which companies will be built to last. Just one final thing, and this is something that will change. I think you and I could think of some examples of companies that would qualify and could have the fundamentals to be built to last. But I'll give you an example of why they wouldn't last very long if they did well. I asked a friend who does business in multiple countries. We were just chatting, and you know, he's a Pakistani guy. Pakistani group started, but now does business in at least a dozen countries. And I said, "What's your favorite country to do business in?" And he said he was about to name like one or two, but then he said, "You know, every country other than Pakistan." And I said, "That's very surprising because you know, you guys still have a large amount of your business in Pakistan." He said, "Well, the problem is in Pakistan, as opposed to any other country, I'm always playing defense. If I know in any other country that I haven't done anything wrong, I'll be able to explain it and carry on with my business. In Pakistan, that's not the case. It'll take years. Will not be able to focus on the business itself." So I think I've said a lot, but
no, that's fine.
It's important for us.
Thank you, Numan. I think it's not that we respect Bill Gates or Steve Jobs because they made money. We respect them because they were innovative and they didn't care for money. They worked hard for something that they believed in. Do we see that in Pakistani business, or do we see people who just want a Mercedes and a golf license or whatever? Imran al-Haq, will you say something on that?
I was going to talk on a few things. One, I fully agree that the environment is not conducive with all the elements that are hounding the business sector. You know, you have your past records available for 20 years and you still can't get away with things. So that's one element which is restricting people from taking risk, from moving into other areas and taking the easy route of becoming traders. We are a nation of traders. We do not want to manufacture. We do not want to innovate. We just want to continue with what we inherited. You heard today that the tractor industry, the motor car industry is suffering, but the tri-wheel industry is gone up. We don't have succession planning. We don't have professional management. Case in point is Indus Motors. We've lost the CEO, an able individual, but the company is now struggling on who's going to run the firm, an icon of the industry. We also, as businessmen, have abused the policies. I take the example of the refinery sector. The government gave incentives for 10 years for the refineries to upgrade. They took the money, but not a cent was spent on upgrading. So we do not, as a nation, have the culture. We don't have the, we have not been taught in our schools to take risks or innovate or look outside. We are very inward looking. We don't want to look even at the regional level. And I'll close by giving you an example. When Telenor came into Pakistan, we were looking at, you know, doing a joint venture with them. And I had spent 3 months doing a feasibility and my numbers were like, you know, 5% growth. And this Telenor guy put up one slide, showed me the regional perspective and said, "Imran, if what you suggested is what is going to happen in Pakistan, we're not interested. I'll tell you what happened around you." And he showed me a hockey stick growth, which he said is what's going to happen in Pakistan, and that's what happened. We didn't have the research tools. We didn't know what to do. So I leave it at that.
Thank you. So there it is. Sameer Ahmed, would you like to come in? I mean, the problem is it's not just the government, it's our whole mindset and the fact that we are really not ready to grow as a people. Sameer, what do you say? Sameer Ahmed has been the chairman of the Stock Exchange and the Commodities Exchange. Go ahead, Sameer.
Okay, I actually had a small question myself or an observation.
Go ahead.
One of the constants we've been hearing throughout is that the government is the problem, the government does not understand, the government does not help us, the government is creating obstacles and so forth. So my question is to us all as a business community, that why do we have so little influence, so little clout with the government? Are we not engaging with them properly? Do we not understand how government works? Do we not understand how political parties work? Do we not understand how legislation works? Why do we have so little influence? It's always complain, complain, complain. rather than being able to do something about it and actually influence the course of government, whether it's by funding the political parties, whether it's by through lobby groups or whatever it is, but there must be a more proactive, intelligent way of engaging with government.
Very good point. I think I agree with you entirely. But the point is the business lobbies, there are a lot of lobbies. All these companies, all these groups have lobbies. But the lobbies, they lobby the government. Now, when I was in the government, they used to be always in our rooms. But they were lobbying only for their own SROs, not necessarily for policy changes. Ali Kamal, you want to say something?
Can I jump in?
Go ahead, Ali. Go ahead.
I think we're right. You know, we keep talking about government and all that's wrong. I think the reason that I raised the point of government was more that the culture of growth is supposed to be created by government. I just want to make two quick points. Number one, look, as far as industrial sort of groups in developing countries are concerned, look, there it's not ever going to be as transparent as it has now become in America when countries go through development phases. The South Korean companies that are those special groups that were giving special privileges, they had it. Reliance books have been written about what the Ambanis were up to all through the 70s and the 80s. Now they're heralded as India's icons. And we've seen like all the Indian scams and all of this thing, these things that are happening. So this is, I think, part and parcel of these developing countries and conglomerates in this. This is something that happens. We've seen it in Mexico, we've seen it in Brazil, we've seen it in Pakistan, we've seen it. So I think that this is something so how do we move forward, right? That's the thing to bear in mind, because industrial groups that make fertilizer, cement and sugar are not going to take us forward, okay? These are dying, dead industries all over the world. They are not going to provide exponential hockey stick growth in the future, right? They'll grow 5-10% every year and that's the end of it, right? So how do we move forward? And we're going to move, in order to move forward, I think that is where it is very important for us to have a very big cultural shift in Pakistan. Because the economy of the future is the information economy. And for that, you cannot be like this policeman state. You have to open things up. You have to allow people and ideas and capital to easily come and go and flow in the country. Because you see, the problem is that when you have an overbearing state that is trying to control everything, that is trying to direct capital, that is trying to hit on inflows and outflows of capital. These fast-growing technology companies are the product of a very free market, very liberal environment. And you know, and until and unless we create that environment, you know, I look at some of these tech startups in Pakistan, and they are brilliant kids. They are really brilliant guys. But you know, all they want to do is that they want to raise a little bit of money in Pakistan. They want to open an office in Dubai. They want to get Middle Eastern funding and they want to become the next Kareem. And I tell them, well, you're a country of 200 million people. Why don't you want to do anything over here? And the answer is, we can't do it. And I think we have to become if I could do one thing for the country, what I would do is that we have to become the anti-India. We have to become easy. Capital movement has to be easy. You can come in and go. You should allow money to come in, money to go, investment to come in. And, you know, take a small thing, for example, the visa regime. You know, it's preposterous to get a visa to come to Pakistan. You need a letter, you need a sponsor letter. I mean, why can't you get a visa on arrival? Why are we so afraid? And I was talking to someone that made a very interesting point. They said that, you know, the Pakistani government is, the Pakistani state is amazing. You're not afraid of nuclear war with India, but you guys are afraid of the market. You know, just let, we have to, and if you look at the growth areas in Pakistan, there are only two areas, and those are legacies of Nawaz Sharif's first government and Musharraf's first government, where they opened up and they allowed investment to come in. And that is the banking sector in Musharraf's time and telecoms. Because it was deregulated, they made it easier, no matter how much PTA tries to mess around with people still, but it's still a sector that is easy and conducive for growth to take place. And I think that if we are to grow, this policeman state needs to be dismantled. And whichever government dismantles this state and allows, you know, entrepreneurship by nature is a liberal you know, breaking the glass ceiling, thinking outside the box, kind of, it's a concept, and it's as much an anthropological issue as it is a political and structural issue. You have to dismantle things and allow this to take place. It's a phenomena that we are trying to control from the top. And until then, unless we dismantle the overarching, you know, function of the state as in these things, I don't think we can get out of it.
Sure. Sameer, can I ask you a quick question? Sameer, are you there? A quick question. Very informative. Or Ali Khizr, you can also tell me. Has the Pakistan PSC 100 index ever changed? Or how often does it change? Sameer, can you answer that? Can anybody answer that? Does anybody know that?
Change, there is a reason why I'm asking. Change in what way?
Change in the sense New York Stock Exchange index changes all the time.
Yeah, as in the composition changes, but not significantly. I mean, it's not still dominated by the same old industrial cement, fertilizer, oil, and gas.
So I'm trying to relate it to your question, Waleed. Our old industries will never die. I mean, for God's sakes, I've teased you about
I'm
a textile mill.
I'm not saying that they're going to die, but they're not going to be engines of growth. They're not going to provide exponential growth. Growth comes from technology, from liberal thought processes, from open-mindedness, from thinking outside the box, from breaking the glass ceiling. And we have an industrial group, we have an industrial sort of class and a government that has this working relationship that everybody's talked about. And it's all about control. They're just not going to let anything happen. And until and unless you break this mold and you allow, you know, a freedom of ideas, a freedom of expression, entrepreneurship is an anthropological issue. It's not something that you can find get with an SRO. You can't make an SRO make you an entrepreneurial society. You can't do it.
Nadeem, can I respond to that? Yes, the businesses in Pakistan have changed, like in PSX. If I was just going through some numbers, what was the top 10 companies of the PSX 10 years ago and what are there in today? So there is a shift in that. There's some companies that have entered into first 10. One is the Pakistan Tobacco. The other is the Nestle. Third could have been Ehsan Malik's Unilever, but it's not listed anymore. And so those companies, if you talk about Angro has come up and look at the Angro food. I remember 10 years ago, 12 years ago, it IPO came at 25 rupees and then you have had a deal of $500 million dollar, which comes about $1 billion company or something. So the companies which are growing in Pakistan, and I totally agree with Ehsan Malik that the businesses are growing in Pakistan, but we need to see what kind of businesses are growing in Pakistan. These are consumer businesses. These are the businesses where 220 million people are using shampoo, soap, milk, beer, Maribiri, if you see that's going as well. And then you see those Pepsi, Coke, these are the not listed companies, but these have grown. Look at the gourmet kind of companies, and they don't get formal, and then they invest in a bank and they lose their money, but they didn't invest in their company to expand something like that. So what we need to just see the structure of the economy. In India, when you see the economies are growing, that Reliance, which is growing, it's going in the petrochemical area. But we are not going in the petrochemical area. Our banks are not growing to that point. Our oil and gas companies are not growing. And that's what we see. That's why we are, our imports are
growing. Basically saying that what's growing is the domestic commerce. I used to say that 20 years ago and people used to make fun of me. Domestic commerce is where it's at, but our industry doesn't want to go there. Ali Kamal, you've had your hand up for a while. What do you want to say? Go ahead. Ali Kamal, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hear me? Yeah. Basically, I have a question that what could be the leverage point? Where should we start? Because there are gazillions of problems we can discuss. But one should start with the problem that which other problems will follow. So, for example, the culture will evolve, but the property rights we have to tackle. So this is my question. Thank
good
you.
Question. Good point. Anybody else, folks?
Nadeem, can I?
Jee, go ahead.
I think that's the question I wanted to address that was just raised. I think practically, if we want to start somewhere, the first thing we have to do is change FBR. because that will that organization causes tremendous problems for the people in the who are paying taxes and for the people who are not paying taxes, but they won't pay taxes as long as FBR is around. They're too scared. And second, I think we need to reform our legal system. We have to have laws, we have to have a legal system which will work. Cases will get decided. Things will get done, not wait for 20 years for a judgment. We don't have a legal system. I think if we start with these two things, and finally, which has already been talked about, is we deregulate, and my favorite word, privatization, you will find that you will create the environment under which things will start moving again. But I think law and FBR will probably be the first thing you need to hit.
So deregulate, change the legal system, improve the tax system, get rid of FBR. Those are the keys. Agreed. But what about our mentality? What about our value system? What am I, where do we have a Steve Jobs who will walk out when he was dying to introduce the Apple?
Question is, I think we have established that the Pakistani is no different than anybody else in the world. We found that we have a Sir Anwar Pervez in London. He's a Pakistani, done very well. We have this guy called Shahid Khan in the States who owns Jaguar. He's done very well. We have, like I said, my own organization, Citibank, and the Pakistanis trained in Pakistan, haven't gone to foreign universities. Domestically trained Pakistanis have risen to the top. So why is it that the Pakistani businessman in operating in Pakistan does not do that? And I'm sorry, I come back to the same point. The environment won't let him do. He spends this, forget the elite businessman, the Waleed father and so on and so forth. The small businessman, he worries, he spends a lot of time and he worries about various government organizations that he has to deal with. He's spending his, that's where his time is going. He didn't have time to innovate. He has time, he has just to deal with these people to live, to survive. You get this out of the way and you get something going. The reason why I talk about law is because no property rights here are, I mean, the small shopkeeper doesn't have rights to his property. He cannot go and mortgage it. Even if the legal system works so that if something went wrong, the banks could attach it, he didn't have the rights. So he first you put in proper ownership and property law, you put a proper legal system, the banking system will start lending to them. The banking system today will not. Several banks have tried to do SME banking in Pakistan. They haven't been able to get anywhere because when they tried to exercise their rights, forget it. They couldn't get anything done. So they lost money and they went out. So you can't do these things until these things are fixed. And when they're fixed, then I think you'll get going.
Mohsin Saab, can I bring you back and ask you, what Alman said is well taken, that we've got people outside, etc. But I still question, do we have the passion for excellence? Or do we discover it when we go outside and work with some other organization or with some other government? Internally here, do we have a passion for excellence? Let me come back to my favorite example. There are, should be many golfers here. We have several golf courses in the country. We have subsidized golf, but we've never created a golf champion or even a professional golfer in ISP. So do we have the passion for excellence?
Is that a question for me, right?
For you, Mohsin.
Okay, yeah. I think we do have passion, but it doesn't come out. I think the environment doesn't let that passion come out. But when the same body goes across and becomes part of an organization outside of Pakistan that gives him or her that environment, then that passion is on full display. And some of the examples that have been alluded to is a result of that. So yes, we do have the passion. I mean, if you do a deep down analysis, you will find the passion. You will find the passion. You will find risk taking. You will find creativity. You will find innovation. But the overall environment, whether internal or external, is not there. So that's why you don't see the output.
Okay. Fair enough. Waleed, I'll give you the final word, but let me just ask you a very simple question. Why do you guys, you being the premier family in the country, you've been there for, your family's been there for 100 years, you've done a lot of work, etc., etc. Why do you guys not invest in innovation and research? R&D budgets of the Pakistani companies are zero. We had the other day Paul Kaiser, who was doing this webinar for us on human resource management. I asked him point blank, where is innovation and R&D? And he said, Pakistan does not believe in innovation and R&D. We don't do it. We are not, this is not our forte. We are going to be the world's laboring class. Is that okay, Waleed?
I think that observation is correct. Innovation and R&D spending as a percentage of people's turnovers in Pakistan is minuscule. It's nowhere near where it should be. We've tried to address that in our own companies, and I'm a big believer in that. So I spend in the companies that I run, I spend a lot of money on R&D. I have a huge incentive structure in place. I put in profit sharing. I've done all of those things that were not easy to get through, but we've done it, right? But you know, as far as I'll give you an example of innovation and little things that coming to Ilman Saab's point, right? So we invested in a fintech business, and that business is for trading on the stock market, right? So we felt that the power of there are 200,000 investors in the Pakistani market. There are 2 million investors in Bangladesh, right? So we're 10 times smaller than Bangladesh. So we said that, you know, let's make it easier. Let's invest in an app that allows people to register online. You just go, you register, you put in your bank details, and you can trade within 20 minutes. Couldn't do it. State Bank of Pakistan says, no, you can make the app. PSX says you can make the app, but you have to go into a bank branch. You have to take physical documents and you have to sign them. Or what it takes 3 days for those to get approved and it comes back. I mean, this is a joke. So we're sitting, we have the app, we have a couple of thousand users on the app, but the whole purpose of the app was so that we could get the soccer mom to invest, right? So you have your phone, you just get on the app and you can don't buy individual stocks, buy funds. So we said, we want to invest in funds. We have the same app in the UK. We haven't launched it yet, but we're going to launch it in the UK, where people will take, it'll take 15 minutes for them to set up an account and they can start trading Pakistani equities, right? But Pakistanis in Pakistan, it takes 3 days. So, you know, we're talking about growth, we're talking about innovation, but we have a state structure that has just got this economy in a vice and is not going to let it go anymore. It can't happen like this. We can lament the sage, we can lament the entrepreneur, but you know, you have to unleash forces within society that will force the sage to change, that will force people to, you know, if Pakistan has its first self-made billionaire technology guy, every sage in Pakistan will wake up and be like, oh my God, how the hell did this guy get ahead of me? And they will start investing in these businesses. We have to look, you see one Malik Riaz and every textile mill owner wanted to become a land developer. Okay. You see one successful apartment project, every textile mill owner in Pakistan is putting up apartments right now. So you have to create an environment where people look, copycat investing is big in Pakistan. Anyone sees something successful, they want to do it, right? Now, I'm telling you, I invest in innovation. I invest in technology. The Fatma Group is trying its level best to invest in information, in technology businesses. They want to set up a fund. They can't do it because the businesses have to be registered abroad for global fundraising. I mean, we have a company that has got the seed investor of Uber. We brought him to Pakistan and they've invested millions of dollars in this business. But can Pakistanis participate in this? No, they can't because it's a Singapore company. So, you know, it all boils down to the same thing. We're trying to do something that is 21st century with a state infrastructure that is from the Raj. You can't, the two things just can't, you know, how long does it take to set up a technology business in the US? Like an hour, 2 hours? You go online, you register a company, you're ready to go. How long does it take to do it in Pakistan? You know, it's too small, it's too slow, it's too cumbersome. And I'm telling you, these are two technology businesses that I have invested in personally, and we are facing huge problems in them because we're just not allowed to do anything.
Waleed, I have a question. Just a question, Waleed. We were talking about this PSX and this. We have very small base of investors. But one issue what I face in the PSX, if we expand the investor base, but when you don't have listings, when you don't have no new companies coming up, and when you don't have existing company going to a certain level, it's a kind of a problem. You kind of inflate it, the market. Like if you see the market in the last few, then new individuals are coming, they're investing, but the older one are exiting and all that. So this is going to happen. The real investment comes in when you have more listing. Why don't we have more listing?
Look. I agree there should be more listings. You have to make it more advantageous for people to list and give the incentive for people to list. But if new investors are coming in and old investors are going out and market multiples are changing, so what? It's part of the market. Who cares?
Yeah. Okay. My question to Ehsan Malik, why did Unilever delist? And then any telco guy, why not we have any telco listed over there? We just have the PDC. But no other telco has ever listed in Pakistan. Why not big businesses list in Pakistan?
Khizat, jab financial market pe karenge na, tab we have to can't mix too many things right now. Theek hai? Okay. Chale ji, anybody wants to answer these questions, then we'll move on. Ehsan, do you want to talk about Unilever?
Okay, so the reason why Unilever delisted was very simple. They didn't need the capital. Capital was available at virtually no cost at all. From the global resources. They only had about, at that time, about 14 or 15% in the market. And then they paid a heavy premium to buy them out. So I think it made a lot of sense from their perspective.
Did we force them to list in the first place?
Yes, absolutely. And the environment in which they and a lot of other multinationals became listed were because the requirement to obtain your investment licenses at that time required you to list. So that requirement didn't apply anymore.
Okay, folks, thank you very much. I think we had a great discussion. We continue to work on this. We will bring it out more. But I would just add by saying that I think it's important that we consider civil service reform. This is why I've been arguing for it for a long time. Unfortunately, nobody wants to make that reform happen. We always tinker at the margins like we are doing now. The business community complains about the government, but does not want to put its shoulder to deregulating, especially getting the civil service reform done. If you don't have a professional government, you will get the monkeys that you pay for, as Lee Kuan Yew said. So my friends, I think you also have to lobby for the reform that you need and not the SRO that you need. Right now, the business lobbies for the SRO that they need. When will our business grow up? And I think that I agree with Mohsin is a mindset issue. Competition is too easy. Synth Club is too easy. Synth Club business lives in Pakistan, not Steve Jobs and Bill Gates business. Thank you, folks. We are taking up, just to tell you, we are taking up the retail business on Saturday. We're bringing in the retail chain. We are trying to ask them the question, why are they not growing? If we are a trading nation, as somebody said, our retail business should be world class. Our retail business is neither listed in the stock exchange, nor is it multinational. So we're going to take up a retail industry on Monday, on Saturday, and on Tuesday, we're going to take up investments, just pure investment, just to see how it works. So thank you, folks. Keep joining us. Let's deepen the debate. Let's learn. All the best. Thank you, folks. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.